Mad Sessmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
I tried to watch Archie Bradley last night. I don't mean that in a way of trying, like, wow, I've got to turn the channel. It was just hard. It was hard last night. If you're a Diamondback fan and you see someone that was so good early in the season, and now he's just searching out there, searching for answers, and you have to wonder about, was it a ball off the face? Is it something mechanical? I mean, they've talked about everything. Are they considering him, sending him down? The catching situation with Tuffy Goswich gone for the year, and a lot around the Diamondbacks. Bob Brenly will join us, Fox Sports Arizona color analyst. BB will be with us at 10:50 this morning to get into this. I have a problem with one of the minor leaguers on this, too, I want to get into. And maybe BB can explain that. Casey Jacobson. Casey's on. How many different networks is it, Eric? Did we count it before the show?
11.
He's on 11 different networks. He's on 15 different networks.
No. But enough. A handful.
It's like Fox Sports 1, Pac-12 Network. He does some Suns pregame stuff. He does some stuff on Big Fox. I mean, he's all over the place. And with the NBA Finals starting Thursday, 8 days being out of sight. I don't know if that's good for the NBA or not, but 8 days away, and I think it's about time to start talking about this Thursday night's Game 1 with Casey Jacobson. And Michael De La Russa will join us at 11:05. Every week we talk United, we walk United, AZ United SC, our pro soccer team here in the Valley, as they continue to grow. There'll be an MLS team someday here, and I think that it will be with this group. There is enormous news. If you were to turn on a television or look at social media right now, the number one trending topic worldwide involves soccer. FIFA president Sepp Blatter resigned about 20 minutes ago. And everybody's going crazy on this story. So it's huge stuff. And we'll obviously talk with Michael for our weekly segment, but we'll get into the impact for the United States and soccer and for the fans in general, as we do every Tuesday for about 10 minutes. It's always good to catch up with Michael De La Russa. Let's get you caught up some of the things on my mind in the world of sports on a busy Tuesday, brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Guys, summer is here. It's the 2nd of June, and you're going to head on out to the high country. You're going to head up to the mountains. You want to head over to the beach. You're going to head up across country, and you're planning all this in a vehicle that you're wondering in the back of your mind, boy, I don't know. This is going to be a little light. This could be tough. This vehicle has a lot of miles on it, or the family's grown, or maybe the family is decreased like we did. We went on our little excursion last November, and our expedition, I looked at the mileage like, this is 150,000 miles. I haven't been in this vehicle. It's my wife's. She's soccer mom, softball mom, club basketball mom for all those years. Kids are now through it except for one. And I was like, why are we doing this? I want you in something that makes sense, that you fit in, that's within our budget, that's a very good brand. And, of course, that means we'll start and end with Ford. But let's get into the Explorer and the certified pre-owned Explorer. That's where my wife is now, and she's very, very pleased, very, very happy with it, with her busy lifestyle. The Santan Ford experience may be right for you right now with summer here. And General Manager Tim Hovick and company, they do it right. They'll find that vehicle for you. Could be new, used, certified, pre-owned, the way we went on the Explorer. Think about it for yourself. Here were your summer traveling needs. At Santan Ford, just off the Santan 202. And Val Vista, Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Adrian Peterson showed up at Vikings camp today. And I've had some people send me notes this morning that, are you going to get off this bandwagon about the Cardinals and Adrian Peterson? And my answer to that is no. Read my lips. No. I don't care that he shows up on June 2nd. Doesn't matter to me. This is not a closed deal. It's not. This is all part of the process, especially when the agent for Adrian Peterson, last time I checked, he hasn't fired him, has been adamant that his client wants out. So just him showing up at OTAs in June doesn't mean jack to me. So let's just get that right out of the way. Over on the Archie Bradley story last night, did you watch, Eric? Did you see any of...
I watched it in parts. I didn't see all of it.
It was painful.
It looked painful. It sounded painful.
It's he had a little bit of bad luck, I thought. You make a play here, you make a play there. There's not the big inning, but then his wildness took over. And then later in the game, he's already down. Freddie Freeman stepped to the plate and was like, look out on Jefferson Street.
And the 1-1 pitch. Freeman hits it high and deep to right center field. That ball is going, going, and gone. Way out of here, up over the pool, into the second deck. And for Freddie Freeman, he's got another homer. He's got two or more RBIs. And just like that, the Braves jump out in front. It's 5-0.
Okay, and Archie finally goes out of the game. They needed to keep him out there longer because I will give them a pass from last night's game. It was 17 innings in Milwaukee. That doesn't mean you come here and play sloppy. Goldschmidt had an error last night. I haven't seen that happen. Was the team lethargic? They didn't look as crisp. But Archie Bradley's got to be fighting for his position within the rotation. Unless you take the tact, and some people have debated me on this on social media, that do you leave him out there just to get him hammered? Pedro Gomez, our good friend, brought up last week, Tom Glavine as an example. Glavine went 7-17 his first year in Atlanta. They just said, you know what? Hell or high water, every fifth day you're out there. It doesn't matter how bad you are. And we see how it worked out for him. Does there come a point with Archie Bradley where it's better served for the organization to say, you know what? He's jacked up. He can't figure it out. He's got to go to Reno. Do you get to that point? Here is Archie Bradley on his location and his thoughts on last night and how he performed.
It wasn't necessarily, you know, walking guys or putting myself in a bad situation, just leaving balls up. I understand the pitch around to get to Wood and throw the first pitch right down the middle. And, you know, he's a decent hitter, so he's going to, you know, put a good swing on. That's what he did. And then ball to Freeman just, you know, middle in. That's where he likes it. So it's got to be better. I mean, all around. I mean, I feel like I'm making strides to get there, but it's just a continuous process.
Okay, so he feels like he's making strides. What did Chip Hale think of Archie Bradley's performance after last night's game?
Man, the fastball a little better. You know, the walks were down, but he got hit pretty hard. Got us through five innings, so, I mean, it's a step in the right direction. So he has to be able to throw secondary stuff, you know, and the hitters can't just be sitting fastball all the time.
Okay, getting us through five innings I don't think is acceptable. At some point, you can't just say, boy, I hope he gets us through five innings. His pitch count is up every game. I'm not sitting here today saying that Archie Bradley has to be sent down. But anybody who's going to put on the rose-colored glasses and said, this is all great and everything's being figured out, you're just kidding yourselves. We're not into that. This is why I like Chip Hale. I actually can make an argument that if you just take away wins and losses, that Chip Hale's been as good as any manager in the National League this year. I think he's been as good as Paul Molitor with the Twins, but he's been really good. Here's Chip Hale after last night's game.
We played tonight, unfortunately, like a team that played 17 innings yesterday and lost, traveled home, which is my fault. It's the coach's fault. We didn't have him ready to play, so I'll take the blame on that. That's embarrassing to me. It's just not the way any team that I would ever want to coach would ever play a game. We ran into an out there with good hitters coming up. We dropped the ball second base when we had a guy dead to rights at second base. Let a guy steal third without even a throw. It's just sloppy, dead baseball. And I apologize for that.
Okay. Right there, that tells me much more about Chip Hale. Because there's a lot of managers or coaches that I've heard through the years that would give the, it doesn't matter what sport it is, well, it's one of 162. We just have to flush it and move on. Yeah, we're coming off a long trip. It's tough. There's going to be these points in the season. And that may well be true, but I'd rather have somebody come in with fire in his belly and apologize for the lack of effort. When you go to your restaurant of choice, okay, and you go there every week, you expect to have great service. That's why you go there every week. And they're not in a position to have a night where it's like, oh, we just suck tonight. We're not any good at that. We can't afford here, although many times we do, have sucky shows. We don't. We have sucky segments. We have moments where Eric wants to beat me over the head with a baseball bat unmercifully because I just kind of do my own thing. But when you come to have an expectation that every game or every dinner or every show is going to be at a high level, that's what you want. That's what you aspire. That's what you want out of your manager. He doesn't need to sit there and call guys out. He gave examples. Throw wasn't made down to third base. Well, that's probably on the catcher. Ball was dropped at second base. Well, that's probably on the second baseman. You know, Tomas tried to stretch out a hit and it was out from here to Tucson. That's just me looking at it, not Chip. But I am so impressed with Chip Hale for where they are. I can't sit here after an 8-1 beatdown and say anything negative about what he's done this season with this club. He's done a terrific job. The roster that he has to work with, stack it up against other rosters. He's getting the most out of these guys. And yeah, they had a bad night last night, but they're going to get back after it today. The news about Tuffy Godswich and the torn ACL, that is very unfortunate. I am more concerned. I'm going to talk about this in a few minutes with Bob Brenly. Peter O'Brien, their minor league stud, he was supposed to be the guy on the fast track to be the catcher here, decided this past week he doesn't want to be a catcher anymore. I don't know. If I'm running the organization, we're the ones that selected you. And last time I checked, if the paycheck is coming, we're probably going to be the ones that say, you know, you're here to catch. Just me. I don't know all the ins and outs, but I know on the surface when I look at that story, not very comfortable with it. Fred Hoiberg is going to be hired today in Chicago. Will Jeff Hornacek just flat out come out and say, guys, read my lips. I am not leaving Phoenix. I am going to stay here. I am going to be the guy. Until I hear that, then everything is fair game. If I'm Iowa State, I'm coming after Jeff Hornacek hard. Coming after him real hard. Casey Jacobson on the other side. Fox Sports 1, Pac-12 college basketball, the Suns. We're talking about the finals. Also, his view of the U of A guys, Stanley Johnson, McConnell, Rondé, and Ashley for the draft. That's all straight ahead. I'm Brad Sussmat.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Casey Jacobson joins us now for a couple of minutes. Sports 360 AZ, AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic. Brad Sussmat back in studio with you. Casey Jacobson, Fox Sports 1, Pac-12 college basketball, Fox Sports Arizona Suns. How many checks do you get during the course of a season? I mean, I don't need no dollar figures. It's your, was it four networks you're a part of in some way?
It was. It was four networks, and this was my rookie year as a broadcaster, but I had a lot of fun, and it's a pleasure to be out with you today, Brad.
Thanks, Casey. Appreciate it. Do they all want you back next year?
That's the golden question, right? And yes, they do want me back, so I'm working with Nathan and trying to figure out how we can better plan this year as opposed to last year so that I can maximize my time.
Let's get into the finals. We'll start there. There's a lot of basketball I want to get to you on. And if you were to do a game of horse with Steph Curry around the perimeter, how long could you last with him?
Oh, that's it. Well, I mean, I'm a pretty confident individual.
Yeah.
I'm confident shooting ability. I made the NBA because of that, largely because I could shoot from distance. But I'd have to say that Steph Curry is probably the best shooter that I've ever seen, and that includes being a teammate with Steve Nash, who was a phenomenal shooter. I think I could last with him. That means, like, when we're playing horse, if you make a shot,
yeah,
and then he makes a shot, or he first makes one, and then I match, I can hang with him for a little bit. But, you know, I would be a liar to say that I'd be confident I would beat Steph Curry in a game of horse.
How, when you watch him play, how far ahead of you is he in terms of shooting?
Well, of me or of everybody?
You. Just you. Just you.
So what he does better than I could ever dream of doing, and this is what makes him, to me, one of the most creative shooters in all of basketball, is his ability to shoot off the dribble with either hand. I mean, he has a great skill set as far as passing and ball handling, and I mean, he's got that thing on a tightrope. And so, and he also has a quick release, and there's a funny or an interesting story that I've done a little bit of research on Steph Curry over the last couple of years, and I came up on a story in his sophomore year in high school. He was really frail. You know, he's still not very big, muscular in stature is concerned. He had to completely rebuild his shot in order to make it quicker because of his stature. He couldn't get shots off. And now you see the fruits of all that labor. I mean, he has as efficient a shot as you can possibly get. So even when you're guarding Steph Curry, he can get his shot off in, you know, half of a second over bigs or smalls, and that's what makes them really special.
Because you know this, when you played, you were that guy. There's Casey Jacobson. I mean, Stanford's playing whomever. We got to take Casey Jacobson. He's a great shooter. Casey Jacobson comes into the NBA. He's a great shooter. We have to keep tabs on him. When you played, was there a player that you walked out on the court and said, oh my gosh, tonight I have to try to contain this shooter? Not just any player, but just this shooter. Is there anybody comparable from when you played?
Well, the guy during my college career was the guy that you would know really well, and his name was Eddie Howe.
Sure.
Eddie played at Arizona State. His senior year was my freshman year. And he was, bar none, the best shooter in the Pac-10. That's called the Conference of the Sun of the Pac-10. He was the best shooter in the conference. And when you played at Arizona State, they weren't very good. The Sun Devils were an average to below average team. But because of his special shooting ability, if he got hot, you were definitely in danger of losing that game. So he was priority one and number two on the board. And I just remember our entire game plan was designed to deny him the ball first, and then when he gets it, to crowd his airspace. But even Eddie House, he is nowhere near as good of a passer or ball handler as Steph Curry. He might be on the same par as far as shooting is concerned, but Steph Curry is much more than just a shooter.
Talking with Casey Jacobson for a couple of minutes. Klay Thompson says he's fine. The dad says he's suffering from post-concussion issues. At least the team is saying he's fine. What is your view of Klay Thompson coming into Thursday night and just this whole protocol of what he went through, where he is, and should he even be out there?
Well, I know this is a very hot-button issue. It started, you know, a couple of years ago with the NFL and their concussion protocol and whether or not it was efficient enough, and I think we all determined that it wasn't, and so they made steps in their respective league to handle that. And so now it kind of goes to the question of, does the NBA need to kind of reevaluate their protocol on concussion?
Yes.
Klay Thompson, Brad, was bleeding from his ear. I don't know if I've ever seen that in a basketball game. That would be very frightening if I were him. And, you know, you mentioned it was documented that he couldn't drive himself home. His father had to do it. He was throwing up. But they've had, I believe, an 8 to 9 day hiatus. And to me, I don't know if that's a sufficient enough time to let the brain recover and be able to play a basketball game. Again, we're not talking about a football game. We're talking about basketball. And though they're both contact sports, we both agree that they're different contact sports. I would be shocked if Klay Thompson isn't in uniform and on the court in game one, and then we'll see how it goes.
When they say that, well, he was bleeding from his ear, Casey, because he had a cut on his ear, come on. Come on. That's why.
Well, he got a cut from his ear because he got kneed MMA style.
Right.
With a flying knee. So, yeah, cut on the ear. And, I mean, obviously, you know, he was thrown up after the game. So, obviously, there was a concussion from that knee. So, whoever says it was just a cut is, you know, an idiot.
You're just trying to downplay it. Let's talk about these coaches. So, it's two rookie coaches in this finals. I mean, Blatt's coached overseas. Steve Kerr has never coached. What do you make out of these two coaches being in this position? And is there one that you think has an edge over the other?
No, I love this storyline. There's so many storylines in the NBA Finals, but I love the coaching one. You know, Steve Kerr certainly, to me, has the edge over David Blatt. And I know, you know, I played 7 years, actually 8 years in European basketball. I played against David Blatt's coach teams before in Europe. But to say that it's comparable to the NBA Finals is ludicrous. And so I understand that although Blatt has more coaching experience than Steve Kerr, I would still give the edge in this series as far as coaching is concerned to Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr, you know, played in the NBA for you know, over a decade and won, I believe, what is it, 5 or 6 championships as a player. I mean, he's played for Phil Jackson. He's played for Greg Popovich. He's been a broadcaster and a GM. He has been an NBA guy his entire, you know, adult life. So when it comes to who has the edge and experience and maybe been there before, even though these two coaches have not actually been there before, I'm giving the edge to Steve Kerr.
Yeah, and some people refer to Steve Kerr, I've seen this nationally now, as Popovich Light, which I think is kind of funny, but that you're actually coaching against Greg Popovich. And, you know, in Blatt's case, he has a guy named LeBron James that he can roll out. So does he make him a better coach? I mean, when Cleveland was here in January, Casey, that was when it was at the height of David Blatt's going to get fired. LeBron had taken a 2-week hiatus. And ever since then, David Blatt, while people will say those two don't get along at all of a sudden he's coaching in the finals. So I think having 23 on his side makes him pretty smart. I don't know how good of a coach he is. I really don't. I know that when there's LeBron saying Tristan Thompson deserves a lifetime contract, it feels like they try to diminish Kevin Love through all of this. And I want to get over to that angle. Kevin Love, the campaign to make him look like he's not as good. What is that all about from your view? Do you see it the same as I do here in the last couple of weeks?
Well, Kevin Love is, let me start with this. Kevin Love was overrated when he was on the Minnesota Timberwolves. That's a classic case of a very good basketball player, which Kevin Love is, on a very bad basketball team, putting up amazing numbers. We see it all across NBA every single year. Now, he goes to Cleveland, and in the regular season, yeah, it was a bumpy ride, but isn't it always when a big-time free agent goes and joins a couple of other, stars and LeBron James and Kyrie Irving? It's not going to be seamless. There's going to be some bumps along the road. But I believe his regular season averages 16 points and around 10 rebounds a game. That's as good as you can hope for, as good as anybody else at the forward position in the NBA playing with LeBron James and Kyrie Irving is going to get. Kevin Love, to me, had a great regular season, and if they had him now, I would say that this is a series that would go seven games, and I'd give Cleveland a lot bigger of a chance than I would now. So, to me, it's always like, people were complaining about Kevin Love. Is he the right fit with LeBron? Does LeBron really like him? But now he gets injured. Yeah, I know they're in the finals, but they are a much better team with him than without him.
Seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, it seems to me that Golden State should win this series unless LeBron James has a series for the ages.
So, Brad, this opinion might be unpopular,
yeah,
but I don't think that this finals is going to be that close. The power of – and I'm a huge LeBron James fan. He's my favorite player to watch.
Right, he really is.
He's the best player. And his power is so great amongst fans that people, I think, mistakenly feel like Cleveland's going to take this, or could win this series. I don't see how that happens unless somebody on the Warriors goes down.
Right.
Or LeBron has an out-of-body experience and literally just dominates every single game. I'd like to advise those fans to take a step back from that power of LeBron and really take a look at these two basketball teams. Take LeBron off the team in Cleveland. Take Steph Curry off the team in Warriors. And we're looking at two rosters that are hugely different. Warriors are so much deeper. They're so much more versatile. They won 67 games this year in the regular season in the Western Conference. And then there's one other stat that I want to mention, Brandon. I think it's relative.
Sure.
14 times in NBA history, 14 times a team has won 65 games or more in the regular season and advanced to the NBA Finals. And every single time that team has won the NBA title. Let's not forget how good the Golden State Warriors have been from start to finish. I know they're playing LeBron James in the finals, but it doesn't diminish how good this basketball team is right now.
No, I think you and I are locked stop on that. Before I let you go, because you did work on the college basketball scene, we're talking with Casey Jacobson, Fox Sports 1, Pac-12 Network. He's got a great agent, obviously. Fox Sports Arizona, Suns pregame. I mean, just all sorts of places. But you did see U of A this year, and the draft is later this month. Stanley Johnson's going to be a high pick. McConnell, Rondé, Ashley. Rondé Jefferson doesn't have a mid-range game, in my opinion. Doesn't mean I wouldn't want him on my team. McConnell's one of those great Aaron Kraft type of players when he was at Ohio State. I love his court awareness. He's a future head coach. Brandon Ashley, kind of an enigma to me. What do you make out of the four U of A guys later this month for the draft?
Really quickly running down those guys, Stanley Johnson is as ready physically as any college basketball player in the country. And that's saying a lot to me. There's a lot of guys who are going to be drafted, who are going to go to the NBA, and we're not really going to hear about them for at least one or two years. Stanley, depending on where he goes, could be a contributor on a good team because he's physically ready. Yes, he needs to improve on his physical or his perimeter shooting, but everything else, he can be a really good defender if he wants to be. I think he could be a special player. Rondé Hollis-Jefferson is one of the best that I would love to play with, love to have on a Tony Allen type of perimeter defensive player, and he can guard probably three or four positions on the court. His offensive game leaves a lot to be desired, but there's a lot of teams in the NBA that could really use a versatile defender like him. he'll get drafted easily first round. DJ McConnell, I don't see him as an NBA player, a great college player.
Yep.
It was surrounded by a lot of great talent at Arizona, but he's not the physical athlete nor the elite shooter to really stick with an NBA team. And Brandon Ashley is a stretch four. We've seen the game of basketball evolve over the last decade or so. I definitely think that Brandon Ashley could help a team offensively space the floor with his ability to shoot the ball.
Let's go off that. Appreciate the time and the insight, Casey. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Brad.
Good stuff there. Casey Jacobson, Fox Sports 1, Pac-12 Network. We've not had him on the show, or maybe I missed it when he was on. We have to have him back. He was really good. It was good stuff. Bob Brenly is going to join us later on in the show today. So I have this problem with one of the minor leaguers. The catcher, Peter O'Brien, doesn't want to be a catcher anymore, and the Diamondbacks need a catcher last time I checked. I have to find out from Bob if he has insight onto this, and I don't know. He's part of the Diamondbacks. Is it them telling him, well, no, you may want to be an outfielder? That's not happening. And Michael De La Russa will be with us later today as well. AZ United SC, we talk United every week on Tuesdays. That's all around the corner. I'm Brad Sussmat. Hey, Jared, we need to get rid of this one. We do. I mean, it was fine back in the day. I'm not in the nightclub in Spain, you know? I'm not in Vegas at 2 a.m. with champagne and guys throwing dollar bills and making it rain money anymore. That was fine. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic. Brad Sussmat on a Tuesday show. Bob Brenly in about 10 minutes. I can't get enough of Bob Brenly. I know this sounds like The Bachelorette or any of those goofy shows that are on, but he's must-see TV every night because he's not holding back. He's not sugarcoating. He's really, really good. And he's been really good. I don't mean this that he hasn't been in the past. It's just he actually has something to work with this year. And so BB's going to be with us at 10:50. You know, the last few years, I have to imagine when they go to the ballpark knowing they're going to get their heads kicked in and they've got to do story after story just to fill 3 hours, just you just want to take a pen and poke yourself in the eye with it. The story of the day here in Arizona, because there's a worldwide story going on with soccer that is it's got me captivated. Because now Nike's involved in this, evidently. So I'm going to get into that in a second. But I think there's two storylines here. One of them is Jeff Hornacek, Iowa State, Chicago Bulls at noon are going to introduce Fred Hoiberg as their new coach. So the Bulls are going to take Hoiberg away from Iowa State. Every corner, every nook, every cranny of who should be the replacement at Iowa State in Ames, Iowa, Jeff Hornacek is either 1 or 1-1-1 or 1A. I mean, there's really nobody else. This is the guy. And Jeff has not come out and said, look deep into the camera. Are you going to pursue the Iowa State job? And he will say, well, no, I'm the coach of the Phoenix Suns. Have you been approached by Iowa State? He'll say, well, no, I haven't been approached. Then you have to go a little further. Have any of your agents, representatives been contacted by Iowa State? And this typically is where a coach starts to squirm around a little bit, because when you say, have you been contacted? Of course he's going to say no. That's being truthful. But when you say, have any of your agents, have any of your representatives been in contact or have been contacted by Iowa State? That's got to be one of those that will probably go down the lines of, I can't talk about that, which means, yes, they have. If he says, yes, they have, then everything breaks loose. So my point on this is, when you go to the Suns today at 11 a.m., and you're there to shoot these guys working out, and most of them aren't going to play here, and most of them aren't going to make it in the league, but it's something easy to go do today for looking for a story. Go to Jeff Hornacek and say, have you been contacted? And he'll say no. Have your agents or your representatives been contacted? Have you been in contact? What are your thoughts on the Iowa State job? Is just too bland. That's not going to give you anything. He's going to weasel out of that. You have to be straightforward. You have to back people into a corner if you're doing your job. You cannot worry about a phone call.
And no excuses, because if you're down there to get Brandon Ashley, according to Twitter, he's not even working out today.
He's not there.
So if you're down there, and you see Jeff Hornacek corner him. But who knows? Maybe the Suns won't make him available because McDonough is usually the front man.
Have you been contacted by the representatives of Jeff Hornacek about his contract? He'll say, well, we're working on Jeff. We want to keep Jeff. Jeff is the head coach of the Phoenix Suns. Got it. Understood.
Oh, and the Suns could bring the hammer and just send out the press release that Jeff Hornacek is getting a new 3-year deal.
Correct.
And then all the speculation ends. Because until we hear from the Suns?
Yes. Yes. Because anything else can be, you can weave and bob and dodge your way through it. Unless you get very specific and just look them in the eye and say, here is the deal. And that's just doing your job. This isn't anything against Jeff Hornacek. I've already been on record saying he should take the job at Iowa State. He should. He really should. The other big story, though, is what's going on today in FIFA. Now, I know that Eric, you're not big on the FIFA thing. You're not big on soccer unless it's World Cup, and that's fine. And some of the audience is that way, too. I'm going to get to a point where I stop apologizing for doing it because it's a significant, significant story. And the way that this story has gone, the head of FIFA who was put back in charge last week, voted back in charge, FIFA's all illegal as all get out. Sepp Blatter, who was given his fifth term, I don't know about term limits, but he's given his fifth term last week. Today he resigned, quit, like an hour ago. And I look up at CNN, I look up at all the major networks, and they're all going wall to wall on Sepp Blatter. And you're like, I don't have a Sepp Blatter. My bladder works just fine, Brad. My bladder works in the mornings and in the afternoons. I have too much coffee. My bladder doesn't, you know, I get it. Sepp Blatter's not on the front end of your thought process. This is a worldwide story, and there are USA ramifications to this. Sepp Blatter, if he stayed in position, there's not a chance that the United States would have gotten another World Cup. Not a chance. This is such a big story overseas. In the last hour after he resigned, William Hill, the top betting site in London, well, they'll take bets on anything, already put five names up with odds as to who his replacement will be. When you have national outlets and worldwide outlets that want to go cover this story because they realize the ramifications of it, it's worth paying attention to. But there's this little bit of nugget in the last 20 minutes I've been able to read about. Nike's involved in this. So evidently in 1996, Nike did a big deal to get the World Cup down to Brazil. It's like $150 million they paid. Well, now there's a report that Nike gave a $40 million check to a Swiss bank marketing firm. It's always good ways to funnel money through the marketing firm that worked for Brazil. It's gotten so crazier in the last hour that Nike's had to release two statements on this. So this is really fascinating to me. The head of a corrupt soccer organization who's using slave labor, essentially, to build a soccer stadium in Qatar where it's 125 degrees. I'm not exaggerating on that. In the dead of their summer when they're going to play the World Cup. And people are dying by thousands over there. This is really an interesting, really interesting stuff here to me. And now you've got Nike involved in this. Prince William pushed in on this already. And so this story is, it's terrific news, I think, for the United States. Michael Della Russo will join us for his weekly segment at 11:05. So that's on my mind today. And, you know, in terms of the long-lasting ramifications of this for the United States, we've come so far as a soccer nation, and there's a reason why you look up on every major network, and they're covering this wall-to-wall. There's a reason why the NBA has 8 days off in between the end of the Eastern and Western Conference Finals and the Finals. You know why that is? There's 1,800 accredited journalists from around the world that now can make travel arrangements to be here for the NBA Finals. Everything has gone global. I know you're sitting here in Phoenix or wherever you take me in from around the country. Your franchises have to have a global reach. Your organizations have to have a global reach. That is the money that's tied up in the labor and the money that is tied up in the money pit that's out there worldwide. I want to see the United States continue to thrive and grow as it is in the world of soccer. I'm glad the NBA Finals are going to be played to a worldwide audience. They'll brag about the number of nations, and the NFL does that, and Major League Baseball does that. But you put it all together, and this story today, you're not going to be able to turn off a network news tonight or the next few days. This is an enormous story. enormous. Bob Brenly on the other side. Diamondbacks television analyst, BB. I have to ask BB about Peter O'Brien, minor league catcher for the Diamondbacks, who was on the fast track, who decided this week, he decided, I don't want to be a catcher anymore. Right when they lose Tuffy Gozwich. And what does he do with Archie Bradley? And some other thoughts from Bob Brenly. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Bob Brenly joins us now for a couple of minutes. Sports 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, Diamondbacks TV analyst with Fox Sports Arizona. How are you, BB?
Oh, doing good, Brad. How are you doing this morning?
You know what? I'm having fun. That's what I got to tell you. I'm having fun, and I'm having fun watching the team every night. I have to admit, and don't take this the wrong way, I've got a crush on you. Every night I have to tune in to hear what's going on because you actually have something to talk about this year. In the last few years, you haven't. So I just have to be straight up with you on that.
Well, I do appreciate that. But, you know, I agree with you. This team is fun to watch. Steve Berthume and I said that going all the way back to spring training. You know, there's some interesting storylines within the ball club. But as a whole, this is a team that's, at least for me, very easy to like. These guys work hard. They go about their business in a very professional manner. And there's enough guys that are just young enough that they still have that youthful energy. And I think it's a fun team to watch.
Okay, so if you were to take just the record and put it over to the side for a second and look at the body of work that Chip Hale has done as a manager, I think he's done about as good a job as anybody outside of Paul Molitor up at Minnesota for what he has to work with. That's not an indictment, Bob. It's just, to me, he's getting a lot out of this group.
Well, and even going back to the beginning of the season, the bottom line for a manager is you try to put your players in a position where they have the best possible chance to succeed. Sometimes that means getting favorable matchups late in a ball game. It means getting the right relief pitcher in there at the right time, giving guys a day of rest maybe when they don't believe they need it, but their performance would say they do need it. And so far for me, Chip has done everything exactly the way I would have done it. I think the way a lot of fans would have done it. When you look at this roster, and certainly there's some weaknesses in certain areas, but to consistently put guys in the best position to succeed, I think he's done an outstanding job.
Do you find yourself doing the first guess and the second guess very often? I mean, I found myself doing that, which is just part of the game. That's the beauty of the game. I found myself doing that a lot more. I don't find myself doing the first guess and second guess quite as much.
Well, and I think that's a testament to Chip. You know, he's been around the game for a long time in a variety of different roles. And much like with players, I think guys like Craig Counsell, who have been a starting player, they've been a bench player, they've been a platoon player, they've been a non-player. I think the more experiences you have, the easier it is to make those decisions and be confident in those decisions. And Chip has been around the block. You know, he's managed at the minor league level. He's been a bench coach at the big league level. He's been a third base coach as a player. He was very good in college, had to really grind throughout his professional career. So he's seen this game from just about every different angle, and that all goes into the decisions he makes on a nightly basis. And once again, I think more often than not, he's made the right decision.
Do you think he's gotten enough credit out here?
Probably not. I don't think anybody that's involved with the Diamondbacks organization gets the credit they deserve. You know, the media hubs on the East Coast, you know, they shut down before our games even start out here in Arizona and on the West Coast. And if you're not a major media market and a major PR-driven player on the West Coast, you don't get much credit back east. So I don't think a lot of people back there the so-called powers that be in the media back east, even though the Diamondbacks are still playing.
And we're talking about Bob Brenly, and that speaks to Paul Goldschmidt. Very seldom do I sit there and wave the flag and say, you know, you should go vote for somebody. You know, ballot stuffing is fun. We did that back in the day when it was deserved with Matt and Luis and Jay, and I think it was 99 or something. And Paul Goldschmidt deserves to be the starting first baseman in the National League. I can't emphasize that enough. Do you think he can get past what's going on with Rizzo and Gonzalez?
Well, it's going to be tough to overtake those two guys. I mean, does he deserve to overtake those two guys?
Yes.
Absolutely. Not taking anything away from Adrian Gonzalez or Anthony Rizzo or Freddie Freeman or any of the other great first basemen in the game. But, you know, just crunch the numbers. Just lay the numbers out there. And Goldie, without a doubt, should be the starting first baseman for the National League this year. Will he be? I don't know. It depends on how many Diamondbacks fans go online and start making those 35 votes.
Yeah. No, and I would encourage him to do that. All right. Where are you at with Peter O'Brien? I saw this story over the weekend when Gozewich goes down with a knee injury, and he was supposed to be the future catcher, and he decides this week he doesn't want to be a catcher anymore. Can you comment on this one, Bob? I mean, I'm just really struggling with a player saying, I don't want to be a catcher anymore, when that's what they have him there for in the system.
Well, personally, I think it's real unusual timing when there's a need for a catcher at the big league level. And,
yes.
Certainly his offensive numbers would say that he deserves a crack at it. Defensively, there were obviously some liabilities which caused the move to the outfield in the first place. But I think in this particular case, you really need to just back up and look long term. Is Peter O'Brien going to be a starting catcher in the big leagues? And you have to make that determination based on what you've seen up to this point. And up to this point, I'd say probably not. And because of his bat and the weight that carries and the potential to have that guy in the middle of the lineup that produces big time for you, chances are you'd want to move him out from behind the plate at some point anyway. We talked about it when Mike Piazza was catching for the Dodgers and the Mets, and there have been other catchers in the history of the game where you go, Buster Posey, they need to move him out from behind the plate to protect that bat. And I think it would have come to that at some point with Peter O'Brien. You would have wanted to move him out from behind home plate, but in this particular case, with the need being there right now,
right,
I'm kind of surprised that he made the decision that he wants to be a full-time outfielder.
Do you see that often where a player says, this is what I'm going to do, rather than the organization saying, we have decided? I mean, do you see?
Well, I think, once again, special circumstance. We all saw what happened in spring training, and there have been marginal improvement with his throwing, but really not enough where you would feel confident running him back there in a big league game and his ability to get the ball back to the pitcher between pitches, and obviously that would be a major, major problem. So, once again, for me, I think if you look at the big picture, you were probably going to want to move Peter O'Brien out from behind the plate at some point in the near future anyway, so this just kind of hastened the process. I put myself in his shoes, and I think a lot of players that are sitting in AAA hoping to get a shot at the big leagues put themselves in his shoes and say, geez, what in the world is wrong with this guy? If they want to call you up and make you a pitcher,
right?
You line up for that. Yeah. But I think O'Brien realizes that his main value is swinging that bat, and it would possibly extend his career at the other end if he goes ahead and makes that position move now.
What do you do with Archie Bradley?
Well, I think the organization needs to make a decision on what this season is. Is this a rebuilding year? Is this a good enough team to compete for one of the wild card spots?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a good enough team to win the division? And, if you think that is the case, then maybe you let him iron out his problems up here. But, for me, I just don't see the upside in continually taking a beating. Even if you're learning things between starts, even if you're taking small positives out of your starts each time, I don't really see the upside in continuing to send a kid out there to struggle with his command. And when he does throw the ball over the plate, he's getting hit hard. Just asking me, I would prefer him to go back to Reno, maybe even go back to Mobile, go back to a level where he can start to have some success again and work off of positives. If your feedback is all negative from start to start to start, eventually that's going to get between your ears, and you're going to start to doubt your own ability. So, for me, I send him down, let him have a measure of success again where it'd be much easier to accomplish the things that he's trying to work on. And, when he gets back to the point where you think he can come up here and compete on a level playing field, then you bring him back up.
Because from April to where he was after he got hit to now, it's like he labors from the minute he gets out on the mound. He just doesn't look comfortable from the moment he's out there. And that's just me watching either in the stands, because I go to a lot of the games, or watching on television. You're much closer to it than me. Am I seeing it right?
Well, I think so. And I talked to Brandon Webb about it after the ball game last night. And it can get to a point where you're working on things and you're trying to focus on certain things. And it kind of gets in the way of just going out there and competing. The golfers, do you inhale or exhale when you hit your driver? You start thinking about it. Well, geez, what do I do? Do I inhale or do I exhale on my backswing? now that has taken the place of just your natural muscle memory, executing pitches, doing the things that you're comfortable doing and that you've done your whole life. Instead of that flowing naturally, you're thinking about every little thing. Where's my leg? Where's my arm? Where's my shoulder? Where's my head? Where's my release point? And that obviously gets in the way of doing what you need to do.
Do you think they're a wild card team? I kind of don't look at anybody like they're running away with this. There's holes for sure. I'm not sitting here rose colored saying, oh, it's all figured out, but a move or two or three here, there, they're not that far off given what I thought they were going to be. I picked them to have 84 wins. Everybody said I lost my mind. I'd been drinking too much while I was out fishing, you know, but I look at the last few weeks of the games that they've lost late. It's like, man, you guys, I would look pretty good, pretty smart for one time right now, if they'd just done a few things.
Yeah, you know, that whole St. Louis series, I think everybody was really frustrated because they were so close in all three games. You know, one big knock here or there, and it could have been a completely different story playing against a really good St. Louis Cardinals team. But, you know, that's the nature of baseball. I think for me, before I can declare them a playoff contender, I need to see a little more consistency out of the starting rotation. You know, we saw Josh Colemanter really good. We've seen him really bad. We saw Hellickson really bad early in the season. He started to show some signs of coming around. Chase Anderson has looked really good at times, and he's given up 20 hits in his last two starts in 10 innings. So there has to be a level of consistency, especially with that starting pitching, before I would declare them a playoff contender.
No, I understand what you're saying. As always, I appreciate your insight and your time, Bob. Thanks.
All right, Brad. My pleasure.
Take care. Bob Brenly for a couple of minutes. Diamondbacks TV analyst tonight on Fox Sports Arizona, Diamondbacks and the Atlanta Braves. I know, Eric, I could do an hour very easily with him. There's so much of intrigue around that team. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic. Michael De La Russo is next, AZ United SC head coach, weekly segment. He lost over the weekend to Vancouver. As always, you are invited to send your questions for Coach Dello. You can just shoot them to me over on Twitter or, and that's at Brad Sussmat, or you can shoot them to our email to brad@sports360az.com. Off we go into hour number two. Thanks for being with us. Sports360az.com, AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic. And thanks again to Bob Brenly for being with us, Casey Jacobson as well on this Tuesday. Time now to Walk United, AZ United SC head coach Michael De La Russo joins us for a couple of minutes. Weekly segment, loss over the weekend to Vancouver. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing okay, Brad. How are you?
I'm fine. Frustration, what's the emotion for you? Fans are getting frustrated. I'm sure for you it's been a tough few weeks here. I don't want to put words in your mouth. What are your emotions about where the team is right now?
Yeah, I mean, we're at a tough part of the season. You know, for whatever reason, you know, we haven't been producing to the level that we should be, honestly. And it's getting that out of our players and collectively coming together and seeing how to move forward from here. So it's a much needed break that we have right now.
Right.
I think we'll get a couple guys back from injury and we'll get guys to start fighting a little bit more for each other on the field. It's a very close group in the locker room. But now they're just going to have to understand that it doesn't just come easy. I think that's where we've been the last couple of weeks. So they're going to have to push themselves out of their comfort zone a little bit. And it's our job to get them to do that.
As you and I have talked through the year that you've been here, just over a year now that we've been doing this, you are very, very protective of your team. And I can appreciate that. Are there players that need to step forward, or do you prefer to keep that within your locker room? If so, what are the positions that you need to see more out of? Because that's what I'm getting from fans.
Yeah, I mean, I would say all 11 guys and all 23 guys on our roster. And that's going to be the emphasis for training. And, you know, it's those guys that prove to us and show that they're going to fight for the organization. And really go above and beyond to get themselves out, as I said, of that comfort level and push themselves to that extra little level that we need them to. But no, there's no finger pointing being done. That's the last thing I do. It's a collective group. It's a coaching staff. It's the players. It's the front office staff, it's our owner, we're all in it together, and we'll all come up with solutions and find ways to get the most out of our group.
I think it's encouraging, though, that fans are asking questions and that they're really that involved and invested in the program. So to see it grow, I think, is a terrific thing. Let's go back to what happened over the weekend against Vancouver. We have both the goals here. And if you could just talk about first one where and let's just go through the first goal here for Vancouver and what happened.
Sure. It was a set piece. Trained them quite a bit this week. We knew what to expect out of them. We knew the runs that they would make. And then it's the second ball. And it's that second piece. And that's that extra little bit we're talking about. It's losing those individual battles, which we've done all year. And it's not one individual that's done it. It's multiple guys, but it's different guys at different times. And that's unacceptable. You know, and it's taking that pride in winning your battles and not coming in second place. And that's what we've done. And that puts us in a hole. And, you know, we haven't been able to kind of get out of it because our offense is obviously struggling and not creating chances.
Second goal then.
Yeah, it was a tough one. We're opened up. May or may not have been a foul at the time. But, you know, those are things that are out of your control. And then pretty poor individual defending. You know, everybody sees the breakdown. And, you know, we took a risk. Didn't pay off for two guys. They walked through us and scored a goal. And, you know, we didn't have a fight in us to come back and try to get, you know, at least one on the board to get us rallied. And, you know, that was the game.
What do you do here in this time off? You've got a break here, as you said. Roster moves just need a break from the day to day for a day or two to get it out of their system, work them harder. How do you go about this then? Because it's a tough time, I would think, in one sense, to have a break. The other hand, it may be a good time to have a break. I don't know. What's your view on it?
I think it's a great time. You give the guys a little bit of a mental break, a step away from the locker room, a step away from the day-to-day routine. And then once they come back, you got to get them out of their comfort zone. Like I said, you know, I'm a different coach at training than I am during a game. And it's the intensity level has to be risen with this group. And, you know, they have to be demanded more of during training. And that's how, you know, these next couple of days will go. And I look forward to it. I think it's a group of fighters. And now it's our job to get that fight out of them. So it's a good time for us. And I'm encouraged moving forward.
Michael Delarusso, AZ United SC head coach. You can go to ArizonaUnited.com and get your tickets for their upcoming matches for all their games at home. Sepp Blatter today, FIFA resigning. I mean, absolute stunner to me, just 15 minutes before the show. What's your take on all this? Because I know you follow the game nationally, internationally. What is your take today? Is this a good day for USA Soccer?
It's an interesting day. I think the last couple of days, weeks, have been very, very interesting with FIFA. You know, it's tough because they have that stigma around the world. Everybody knows that, and that's something that soccer has to be better at, and FIFA has to be better at. They know there's bribery. There's things across every country that this happens, and I think probably in America, the first time people have seen it, or most people, the general public, is if they watch the 30 for 30 on Escobar, and they see, you know, wow, that really takes place, and it does, and to different levels. You know, and Blatter was in a tough spot. I think he got to a point where he realized that things are going to come out that he knew about. You know, and his top lieutenant, you know, is taking over $10 million in bribery, and him to not be aware of that, or I'm sure he was aware of it, that's something that's going to be tough for him to kind of dig himself out of.
The Swiss Attorney General did confirm that he is under investigation now, that Sepp Blatter is under investigation. And there's been some social media traffic today that here in the United States he was under investigation as well. Nike's had to send out two releases in the last hour saying they had no idea of a $40 million marketing firm deal with FIFA in Brazil and Nike money. I mean, Michael, this is just big, major shifts that are going on in the sport.
It's massive. And, you know, I don't know if a complete overhaul is in need, but something definitely certainly is, because it puts a very, very bad image on FIFA and, you know, the most popular game in the world. So I don't have an answer.
I
don't think a lot of people do, but it's going to take a collective effort to see what their next step is, and I'm very, very interested to see their moves.
I asked you off the top on this one. Is it a good day for USA Soccer? Is this a good day? Because in my view, how Blatter came out last week, it felt like we are never in the States going to have a shot at getting anything if he's still in charge.
I think so. You know, when you have guys that are saying that the U.S. deserves, you know, a World Cup or more recognition or this or that, big-time names in the game, you know, I think it goes a long way. So I don't know what he had against, and that's how it's tough, you know, and it's all based on relationships and who he's talked to and what he feels is owed to certain people. It's just, like I said, I think a lot of people are at, you know, a point of confusion and very, very interested to see on what the next moves are.
Yeah, because I think we could hold a World Cup here easier than Qatar and have slave labor and people dying in big numbers over there building a stadium where it's 120 degrees when they're going to be playing the matches, and how we get shut out on that, I have no idea. But I'm pretty fired up on this one, Michael.
Beyond me as well.
Yeah.
Beyond me as well. And we know of the, you know, our country, and we can hold big events. And we've shown it. We showed it in 94 when the game wasn't even at the level that it is now. Imagine us holding a World Cup now, especially after our recent success last year in the World Cup. And with the growth of MLS, everything, with international guys coming over here, I think it would be an amazing event, and I think the world would be the true winners, not just our country, which would be awesome.
And the ladies start this week. I know you're focused on your team. The world is going to have their face on the ladies and the United States team. Do you have a feel about how they're going to do? Do you have a feel about the team?
Oh, it's tough. I think, you know, they've had a lot of injuries and lineup changes in and out. But I think if they start clicking and find the right pair, especially up top for them, the young girls that have been showing really well recently, mixed in with their veterans, you know, they're an exciting team to watch. And hopefully they can get a good result, I think. You know, there's a lot of pressure on them because U.S., you know, came right out of the gate and was the top team in the world for many, many years. And it's been 16 years since they won a World Cup. So it's one of those things where, you know, I think as long as they deal with the pressure okay, which they should, and they should be able to, you know, get good results. And it'll be fun to watch.
How are you dealing with the pressure?
Okay. You know, this is part of the job, right?
Yeah, that's why you do
it. With everything. And it's a big reason why I wanted to take this job. And, you know, if there was no pressure, then that would mean that nobody would care about it. And that's why I love our fan base. And while they're asking questions and demanding more, I love that. I think that's great. You know, it's something that we want to be held to a certain level. And if we're not at that level, then, you know, they should demand it out of us. And it's appreciated from my view.
Appreciate the time as always. Talk next week. Thanks.
All right. Take care, bud.
You too. Michael De La Russo, AZ United SC head coach. Good job there standing in with where they are. They're off this week, which is probably a good thing from the coach's view.